Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Áine Kerr here, sitting in for Brendan. Now, Dr. Pete Lunn is with me, behavioural economist and founder and head of the SRI's Behavioural Research Unit. He's interested in why we do the things we do. So today we're going to talk about human behaviour on our roads and in our cars. Pete, welcome to the show. We've obviously had a bad start to the year in relation to fatalities following road accidents. 80 people have died on the road since the beginning of the year alone. I'm conscious that means we've 80 individuals, families suffering immeasurable loss across the country, having lost their beloved on roads. We're going to speak more generally, broadly here today when it comes to what is happening on our roads and road behaviour. So maybe to start with phones, because we hear and see a lot of anecdotal evidence that this is maybe one of the pressing issues that we need to understand more about. And while we might not have a lot of research here in Ireland, you've been looking at international research.
Good morning, Áine. I mean, I need to qualify this a little. I'm a behavioural scientist, not an expert in road safety, but I have been looking at the road safety data over recent weeks because it's impossible not to be interested in it and trying to understand what's going on at the moment, given the increases that we've seen. And you know, nothing much has changed in the infrastructure or the design of cars during that time. So human behaviour has to be the thing that you would think is the most important. And I'm particularly interested in phones as a potential main driver, if you like. I mean, this is a hypothesis, I don't know this, but as a kind of main driver of what's causing the problem at the moment, I think that's a possibility. There are other factors too, and I'm sure we'll come on to those. But one of the things that's very interesting is if you look at the international research, using a mobile phone in a car has a dramatic effect on the likelihood that you're involved in a collision. It's really, really large. And I'm using the expression really, really large because I know as a behavioural scientist that human beings are not very good at processing and understanding probabilities. We don't find them very intuitive. And actually, it's even hard to measure when it comes to mobile phone use in cars. But the best measures we have would suggest you're probably somewhere around kind of 15 to 25 times more likely to have a collision if you're using a mobile phone in a car. And I don't just mean holding a handset up to your ear. I mean using a mobile phone in multiple different ways. Now, it's very hard to measure. It's very hard to be precise. But the thing we are absolutely sure of is that phone use in cars dramatically increases your chance of a collision.
There have been efforts in terms of education initiatives, running ads. We've seen the RSA with the tagline, "It won't kill you to put it away." How effective have campaigns like that been as a call to action amongst the public?
Okay, so as a scientist, the only answer I can give to that is we have no idea. And the reason for that is because actually measuring the impact of ad campaigns in any walk of life, whether it's commercial or whether it's public service advertising and so on, it's almost impossible actually to see whether particular campaigns have an impact. Although I have to confess, I thought the tagline for that campaign was pretty clever and pretty good. But let me give you an idea of what we are up against. So we've got around 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 drivers who are confessing to using mobile phones to receive and quite often send text messages as well in cars. Now, that's almost certainly an underestimate.
Self-reporting.
So when I study a thing that in the jargon we call social desirability bias, in ordinary language, it's people either living in denial because they won't admit it to themselves, or more often not admitting it to someone who's asking them survey questions. So you can imagine that number's probably substantially higher than that. If you made me bet, I'd say it's even about a third to a half of us are probably checking messages, and a good proportion of those also sending messages while driving. Now, what's really interesting there, though, is when you look into the data, there is a huge age effect on this. And that gives me real pause for thought. As we see the accident rate climbing and the fatality rate on Irish roads climbing, I think there's a real danger that there is a cohort of people on our roads now that's going to only get larger as generations get older, who are using phones in cars in a completely different way to the people who came before. So to give you an idea of that, when you look at those numbers of mobile phone use in cars, what you find is that the 25 to 34-year-old group, they're using their phones in cars about twice as much as the older group. But then when you go to the 24s and under, it's double again. So you're seeing a really, really large increase in mobile phone use among younger adults. Now, you might say to yourself, well, they're going to get older and wiser. Maybe they'll stop doing it. I don't think so. I mean, I think the danger here is the more likely thing is that you have a cohort for whom the norms of mobile phone use and the behaviours and habits of themselves and their peers is completely different. And they may be unaware, I don't know, of exactly how much impact that has on your likelihood of collisions.
It feels like on what you're seeing there, that there might have been acceptable, agreed norms for older generations. But of course, for this generation now, it's more devices, it's more platforms, and there isn't maybe an agreed social norm of when you get in your car, what is an acceptable amount of time not to respond and leave messages on read, leave emails on read. Do we need a new social contract around that, or is it technology that can help to solve for it?
It's a great question. I don't know, but what I'm very confident of is that the social pressure to respond to messages is now much greater, because we're sending and receiving messages so often, and people are asking each other questions, and we leave arrangements about times to meet and places to meet and when we're going to be back and all these things. We don't tell people that in advance anymore. We do it on the fly. But if you're driving, that means you come under much greater social pressure to be communicating with people while you're driving. So I think those social pressures are much higher. It was interesting that you used the expression, and I'm not saying this to kind of pick on you, but it's interesting how we think of these things. You said agreed social norms. Now, what's so fascinating actually is no one's ever really discussed this, thought it through and agreed it. It's just habits. And what happens is the habits from our normal life bleed into the car in a way where actually we haven't thought it through. We haven't agreed it. You know, we haven't decided what the rights and wrongs of it are.
So then if it can't be agreed, do we have to think about how car manufacturers, we step into that car, increasingly your car and your phone goes into car mode. And does something need to happen automatically?
I think that's a really good question. So I've got some skepticism, you know, somebody who studies behaviour in multiple walks of life, I've got some scepticism about how easy it's going to be to adapt the behaviour of drivers so that when they get into that car and they close the door, that they'll suddenly start to behave in ways that are different to the norms and habits that they have outside of the car. And therefore, technology potentially offers you a real solution here. I mean, we're all familiar with the idea of phones having an airplane mode where the phone itself is actually saying, this is just what you do when you're in this environment, and you get a reminder to do that. There may be technological solutions here. I'm very skeptical of the human solutions being highly effective, and that's not me saying that we can't do something about it by spreading ideas, by spreading understanding, by trying to create better norms. I'm sure we can. But I think technological solutions and changing the environment in which people operate would be really helpful. I mean, one thing we haven't yet mentioned that's really important here is that humans generally, I mean, I mentioned we're not great with probability. We're particularly bad at dealing with very low but high impact risks. So catastrophic but very low risks. The human brain is very poor at doing calculations on those and adjusting, because it's not the environment that we typically inhabit.
Because on that, we're all increasingly used to the idea of hands-free technology in our cars and maybe having phone calls, having conversations. How different is that versus a conversation in the car with a physical human being when it comes to how we're thinking about context and circumstance?
That's a great question, because people's intuition is that if I'm using a hands-free set and I'm having a conversation, well, that's the same as having a conversation with someone in the car. So consequently, that there isn't a safety issue here. Actually, what's really interesting is the research shows that's not true. Even having a conversation on a hands-free set increases your risk of collision. You might say, well, why is that? I mean, does it increase my risk of collision to be talking to my partner in the passenger seat? Well, the reason actually is because when you're talking to other people in the car, when you approach junctions or when things happen on the road, they see them too. And if you ever notice how people talk in cars, as the driver approaches junctions, they tend to shut up. They tend to go quiet, particularly people who themselves drive are more likely to do this.
So you can have that radical
focus,
concentration.
They are aware that the driver needs to concentrate. And if something appears on the road in front and there's an obstacle or something happens in front, the other people in the car will immediately cease the conversation. But of course, if you're talking to someone hands-free, that's not true. They're going to keep distracting you while you need to concentrate more. So actually, the research is pretty clear on this. Talking on a hands-free set increases the likelihood of collision compared to talking to someone in a car.
Okay, so that's the phones factor. Let's go to the speed factor. You've been looking at some research around the acceptability and how we think about when we look at a speed limit and what is appropriate in terms of your flexibility, let's call it, of going over below that.
Yeah, so quite high proportions of the population will confess to speeding. So, you know, you're talking about half the population saying, well, yeah, I speed, but only a little bit, you know, less than 10 kilometres an hour over the speed limit. But you've got more like one in four to one in three who will confess to regularly going more than 10 kilometres per hour over the speed limit, and also to overtaking cars that are actually driving at the speed limit, but nevertheless overtaking them in order to go faster. So quite a high proportion are saying that. Interestingly, you're right, there's also research there about the acceptability of those behaviours. And again, you've got around a quarter of drivers saying that they think those behaviours are acceptable. So the norms here are problematic because we know that speed plays a really important role in the likelihood of collisions, again, and particularly fatal collisions. So speed is a factor in, you know, something like sort of, you know, one in eight to one in 10 collisions, but it rises to more like one in three of fatal collisions because speed is also a factor in the degree of injury. So speed is really, really important. Interestingly, speeding and people confessing to speeding went up following the COVID pandemic. And it's come down a tiny bit since, but not really. It's kind of stayed. So something changed around that time, which is not fully understood. So speeding has got worse on our roads in recent years, and the acceptability of it is there as well. I think something that's really important here is, again, the behavioural scientist in me knows that people adjust their behaviour in response to feedback. But when it comes to low probability catastrophic risks, we never get any. You know, the first time you're really going to realise how much speed, how much difference speed makes your ability to control a car is when you are in a nasty accident, because it's so rare actually that you end up in a situation where you have to respond to something where you're going too fast and you have to avoid a very serious collision, swerve around something, get your braking right, make an absolute split-second decision that potentially saves your life. That is not something you do often that you get feedback on. You may only do it once and it may be the last thing you ever do. So the human brain is not really designed to understand what it's up against until it's too late.
Because that leaves you then, because of course we don't want people to realise that awful consequence, then you're having to use sometimes fear. You know, like you the threat of Garda pulling you in for speed, drug, drinking. So you've got the fear part, you've got the education part, which hopefully leaves you with a feeling of, I want to change, I want to be part of the change, this is good for my surrounding community. That carrot stick approach, like, what do we think actually works here?
So I want to push back a little bit against carrot and sticks, because there's so many other things other than incentives that are involved in people's behaviour. So, you know, the way the road is designed, the way the car is designed, all of these things matter. And quite often people are behaving really instinctively where they're not taking into account any incentives. Now, that said, it is clearly the case that enforcement matters. I mean, we do know that enforcement and deterrence do alter behaviour on the roads, but they're only one component, and possibly not even the largest component, of what alters people's behaviour on the roads. Now, part of the reason for that is, of course, people think the probability of being caught is quite low, and often they're correct about that. But of course, we can increase enforcement and increase the probability of being caught. In the case of phone use, just nipping back to that for a moment, though, I'd be fascinated to know, if you survey people, what proportion of the population know what the law is about what you can and cannot do on a phone in a car, or indeed what the penalties are. And I suspect that the proportion who know it is incredibly low. I know I myself had to look it up. I mean, actually, you know, the receiving and sending of information via a phone in the car, full stop, it is illegal. And the fine for it, I believe, from what I read on the internet, is €120. Now, I didn't know that before I looked it up. I suspect people don't. So those kind of enforcement incentives are very unlikely to work if they're not front and centre. People don't actually know them at the time.
We've a texter who says on driving, this is anecdotal, but I live on a busy road in a residential area of Cork City, and without exaggeration, I can see at least every third driver on their phone as they drive past, and it's all ages. And I wonder, in terms of how we solve for this, and if it is the education piece in terms of the consequences you're talking about there, like, we know with seatbelts, that's instinctive, I would say, for large majority of the population. Do we need something similar, that this just becomes instinctual? Phones away, no drink, drug driving, speed, maybe restrictions on cars. Like, what is it going to take fundamentally to change behaviours?
So certainly I would favour if it can be done, and I'm not saying there's a simple solution to this, there really isn't, but if it can be done, the most likely thing to succeed, we know in behavioural problems like this, and this is a kind of collective problem where if we were all to agree, we could change norms here. So, I mean, if there were behaviours in cars that were understood to be the right thing to do that meant actually you weren't in contact on your phone for the period of driving and everyone just accepted that that was true and was going to be true, that would make a big difference. So is it possible to introduce what essentially is a kind of simple agreed norm of behaviour that we try to get everybody to do when they get behind the wheel of a car? I don't know exactly what that rule is. I don't know exactly what that norm is. I don't know exactly what the involvement of technology is. But if we can come up with something that is a simple rule that you try to put in place that is a norm that everyone understands is the right thing to do, yes, that could make a real difference. That's the kind of thing that you want to do. There are other issues that are really important here as well. Of course, there's drink and drugs and fatigue. So, I mean, we focus a lot on phones here. Those things are changing too. But I think the phones thing is something we really need to look at.
A rules-based approach. Thank you for that. Dr. Pete Lund, behavioural economist and founder and head of the ASRI's Behavioural Research Unit.